Hello and welcome to another All About Symbian Insight podcast. This is Insight number 48, if we've counted right. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And Ewan Spence.
There we go. Now, the big question is, where was Rafe yesterday? Rafe sneaked off for the day, and I've no idea where he went, and I've no idea what he went to see. So, Rafe, what's the news? What's the gossip?
Yesterday, I went up to London to go to the Ink launch, and Ink is a new mobile handset company. I'll explain some of the background in a bit, but they're part of the Hutchison group of companies who also own the UK operator 3, and of course it's an operator in a couple of other countries as well. And they were launching what's been dubbed the Facebook phone, although that's actually a bit more a bit inaccurate and doesn't really describe everything that's there. So what this is a fairly bog standard looking feature phone in one respect, but it is what they're proclaiming is the first socially aware or social networking phone, and it combines elements like Facebook and Skype, instant messaging, Last.fm, and a number of others, and there's more to come as well, into a single phone. And rather than being sort of individual applications, there's a great deal of integration going on. And it's kind of quite hard to describe, but the probably best example, if I give you one example of this, you think of all these internet services that you have on your PC in your sort of status bar. You know, you have things like Skype, you have your IM, you probably have an email alert as well, along with a couple of others. You know, people may have Twitter or that sort of thing. And they're very readily accessible. So on the PC, you might communicate in any number of ways. But typically on a mobile phone, it's still really all about voice and text. And what they were trying to do with this phone was promote these other features to be at the same level as voice and text. What they've done in the software is that means in messaging, rather than just getting text messages and emails, which we typically see, they've also integrated the IM so you can see new chat conversations from Skype, from MSN Messenger, but you can also see status coming in from Facebook as well as Skype and Messenger. And that's true of the contacts as well. So, for example, once you've entered your Skype login details, you get all your Skype contacts automatically downloaded to the phone. And this phone is able to make Skype calls as well. It actually uses the iScoot-based service or similar to that, where it calls over the network. But as far as the user is concerned, it can make calls to your Skype contacts. And rather than having these all as separate applications, it's all integrated into one. So think of your contacts applications. Once you've signed into all of these services, you get all of your contacts into a single application. And at first you go, that's a recipe for disaster because I'm going to have 5 different versions of Ewan in my contact book. But what the phone allows you to do is integrate those into one. And so, you know, you look at your contact list and you see all these people, but you also see status information and presence information from each of those services. And I think we've talked in the past about the idea of sort of address book 2.0, to borrow the O'Reilly phrase, and so, you know, you see also the avatars coming in from Facebook and what they're doing, and so it's a much richer experience trying to integrate as many of these software internet communication services together into one. And they've done a pretty good job on it, so hopefully I've explained some of the background of that. Are there any questions that immediately leap to mind from either of you?
It sounds like it's almost like that river of status and information that you get. For those familiar with Facebook, it's that column which shows up what everybody's doing. It sounds like they've just developed this for the phone. Is it like the main view is just a list of this message came in, this call goes out? Or is it more sort of icon and application based? I mean, what I'm trying to get at, is it just you have your social river of news, like a great big RSS feed of what all your friends are doing over all the services, or do you have to go into the Facebook bit, go into the MySpace bit, go in, you know, like you would go into, oh, I don't know, applications?
Yeah, well, I think the answer there is it's not a social river of news, but nor is it individual applications. These stuff have been integrated into the typical mobile user experience. So you still have a messaging application, and you still have a contacts application. But instead of having to go into a Facebook application separately, it's already within contacts and already within messaging. So you can get that information. There is a Facebook application that gives you that sort of, you know, river of news, if you like, or river of status information. but you can access it from within contacts, and, you know, sort of a shortened version of it is within contacts. And so it tries to marry that sort of experience you get of the stream of information from that's typical of these internet services into the typical user experience you have in a phone as well. And I think this is pretty powerful, especially for, you know, those who use these services a lot. You know, it's a very compelling offering. And especially when you bear in mind they're going to be charging £80 for this on pay-as-you-go with a sort of minimum £10 per month top-up, or on contract it will be £15 a month and it will be free with an 18-month contract. I do actually think this is probably still a little overpriced for the 90% of the market they were talking about. I mean, the interesting thing they were saying, it's not obviously targeted at smartphone owners or people who are using high-end phones. They're after the sort of 90% of the market who are on the bog standard phones that just make voice and text, and they want to try and encourage these people to come in and use internet services on their mobile phone, which is a very laudable aim. There are some issues with it, but I was impressed for version one. I actually think the main issues are around sort of the marketing of it. They're launching a new brand, which is what Ink is going to be effectively, is going to be difficult. And there's more handsets on the way next year, and they'll probably add in stuff like GPS. I mean, at the moment, the hardware in some ways is irrelevant. I mean, it's a slider phone with a bog-standard sort of 3 megapixel camera, and there's other ways fairly unremarkable, but that's what you'd expect at that price point. And it's based on the Brew platform, and they've sort of basically built their own UI and API on top of it. But where I do think it's interesting here is you have the sort of... it's a different direction to the same future that Nokia are looking at in terms of, you know, a service-driven future. So, you know, with Nokia, we have the Ovi offering, and they're very much driving that down from the top end into the mid-tier. And in one sense, it's happening the other way around with the Ink approach. And it's really the first time I've seen this actually delivered in a way that I think is usable for the average person, rather than just being one application, which really doesn't do anything for me. You know, you have to have it integrated fully into the user experience, which they have done quite successfully. It's difficult to judge the uptake on this, you know, standing as outside. You have to wait and see what happens in the market. But I do think this provides a quite interesting competitor to Nokia in the Ovi space, and for S60 and Symbian to try and get it into an All About Symbian podcast, I think this is a competitor to sort of Symbian in the mid-tier, more so than something like some of the other open platforms, which really don't have the oomph to run on these lower spec phones and the price points we're talking about. I guess we'll touch on that later in the show.
Rafe, what does INQ stand for? Am I missing something obvious?
It doesn't stand for anything, as far as I can tell. It's just sort of the brand. I mean, it's the same people who came up with the three and the orange brand did the creation of this brand. And I suppose it's sort of meant to appeal to sort of the younger market. And they've done some clever ideas, like they've got a whole bunch of up-and-coming illustrators in and to do various designs, which they're going to use on the boxes. And rather than having a user manual, everything is color-coded on a deck of top trump cards. But it's quite clever because the color coding is such that you look at the application or area on the phone and it's color-coded orange. So you look for the orange card and then you can, you know, see how to do it. And with a card, you can just take it with you. So, for example, you want to use it as a USB modem. You just look for the purple color, pick out that card and take it with you.
Back in my day, we had an index and we were thankful. We could know what we were looking for, look up a page number and cross-reference it. I mean, what?
Well, this is obviously index 2.0, Ewan. I mean, you have to move with the times, obviously.
No. Yeah, you may all decode that. It sounds like a whole bunch of 30-year-old men trying to be hip.
Well, I think that's possibly a little unfair, Ewan.
Okay, sorry. 2 30-year-old men and someone who's in their 20s.
Well, perhaps that's fair, but having never been particularly hip myself, I can't really criticise. But as I say, I mean, for me, the interesting thing here was, you know, we talk a lot about things like presence and, you know, the use of internet services, and we've been talking a lot about Ovi as a service-driven thing. And obviously Nokia's got a very different approach, and the advantage of someone like Ink is they're able to be a lot more flexible, and they're coming up, you know, bottom to top as opposed to the other way around. And in one sense, they're not really a serious competitor in one sense of the word, because they're never going to have the same scale. But I do think any of this kind of sort of uptake of internet services is going to be good for everybody, because it drives sort of new usage experiences in mobile. And we've talked a lot about driving that in the mass market and how difficult that is to do. So it was very interesting to see this, and one of the more interesting approaches I've seen in recent times, I think it's fair to say.
Do you think there's a chance that there'll be a Nokia S60 device in the Ink brand, or are the two mutually exclusive by virtue of the competition in terms of services?
Well, I think it's probably fair to say at least initially there won't be, but what is interesting about this, I mentioned very briefly, it's built on the sort of Brew platform, but in fact all the middleware that Ink have invested the money in, which they've actually sort of outsourced, I think, some of it to Amoy, who's also manufacturing the devices. It's actually platform independent, so in theory they could port it across to Symbian, and given that Symbian is probably the one open platform that certainly, maybe not right now, but in a few years' time will be capable of running on the very low-end hardware, more so even than Android, despite most people's expectations, it is possible that in the future you could see a Symbian-powered Ink handset, but I don't think it would necessarily look anything like an S60 handset. And equally, well, they could run, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see this approach taken, you know, bringing the internet services into contacts and messaging in an application form on S60, either from Nokia themselves or from a third-party developer. I mean, in one sense, they've done this kind of thing with Share Online, albeit in a much more limited way in terms of media sharing, the way you can see all your media from Flickr and from Ovi in this one application, and then use it elsewhere on the device and upload new stuff. I mean, it's not dissimilar approach to that kind of embracing of internet services rather than trying to do everything yourself, which, you know, we've typically seen operators do. So again, it's three pushing the boundaries, as they did with X series, you know, and accepting that these brands that people are familiar with from the internet, they want to access them on the mobile rather than trying to do, you know, Vodafone's version of Facebook or whatever it happens to be. And so this is I think a sign of things to come. But also, you know, if you think about the average user, they just don't use things like Facebook on their phone, although there does seem to be a latent demand, and Three had the usual stats to back that up. But it's very interesting, I thought, to see this come, as I say, at the pay-as-you-go price point of 80 quid, that's, you know, pretty accessible to most people. And this also comes with the NetFront browser, so it's a pretty good browsing device. It's 3.5-hertz flashlight 3. It's got an accelerometer in it, so it offers a pretty good mobile internet experience in general. But they were definitely underlining that rich clients were an important way to go for things like Facebook and MSN, but also some of the other services. And as I say, Last.fm scrobbling built into the media player. There's a lot of things that people like to do with the, you know, the open platform devices, but can't do on the feature phones because the support just isn't there. So it's quite interesting integrating this into a platform, if you will, for a feature phone-like device, something we've not really seen done before, and I think it will drive uptake far more so than we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Ray. Thanks for that detailed report on Ink. Let's move on to devices now. As you may know, regular listeners, stroke readers, will know I've had the Nokia N96. It's now gone back to Nokia PR, and I'm not at all sad. Although it's got great potential, I have to say that despite my first impressions where everything kind of worked, the more I pushed it and pushed it to the sort of levels that most of us push our S60 devices, the more it started to fall over. And I have to say that the current firmware, which is version 11, I still would regard as beta. I can't believe they've released this into the high street in the current state, because it just falls over too often. As a tech user, I'm used to S60 devices, especially with early firmware and prototypes, etc., etc. I know what to do, and I'm not totally phased out when something crashes with an error or the machine locks up. But the Joe Blogs in the high street is going to lose confidence in this very quickly. And I know I had a rant on this on the site about a week ago, but I'm just ranting again here. I think it's shocking the state that some of the early firmwares that get released on these devices. And the N85 is now in the All About Symbian Towers. And I believe you and Spence, you're going to review this next week. What are your expectations in terms of the changes over your current beloved N95 8GB?
Well, the obvious one is the screen. The N85 switches back to the 2.6-inch size screen compared to the 2.8-inch that you have sitting on the N95 8GB. But on the other hand, it's the organic screen, which is allegedly brighter, which means it's viewable in sunlight and has a much wider viewing angle, so for things like videos, pictures, and general watching, it should be a better thing. So I'm doing my best to try and clear my mind of everything so we can go into it the fresh thing. It's those people who have read my previous stuff will know that I'm not a great fan of this new Nokia design with the square circular scroll wheel D-pads and the completely flat keys. That is something that I'm going to have to try and get out of the way. I mean, to a certain extent, I think it's important to remember that this isn't an upgrade from an existing device like the N95, which a lot of people are hoping it will be. This is one of those evolutionary devices that is basically very slowly moving things up forward for people who are coming in to the operating system. And I think that phone needs to be judged on that. If you stick it next to a 95 8 gig, then there will be differences, I'm sure, but they may not be enough to convince you to do an upgrade on sale. But put it next to a standard feature phone that the average person has been using over the last year or 2 years, and then be handed in something like an N85, then, you know, boom, there should be a very large sea change of information there. The point of it is it's meant to be similar. The point of having N series is that there's a certain consistency, and whether that's good or bad for Nokia as a brand, you know, that remains to be seen. They have the N series brand, they have their regular phones, and they have their E series brand. And of course, the E series brand is something that's popped up in the last week as well, with the delightful packages being sent out of the red and blue E63s. Rafe?
No, I'll take that one. But Rafe's busy jetting up for a question I'm going to ask him in 5 minutes' time, so we'll leave Rafe to do it. The E63 has been announced, you probably saw on the site. Quite why they didn't send all about Symbian one, I have no idea, so I haven't even seen one or touched one. As far as I can see, it's a lower cost, plasticized version of an E71 without the GPS and with a lower spec camera. And Rafe's popped up in the back channel to say he wants to say something about the E63. So, Rafe.
Yes, as Ewan says, Steve says, it is a lower cost version of the E71, but I don't actually think this is, you know, the interesting thing about it. And one, you know, there's an obvious comparison to be made, but the price point of this is absolutely amazing. I mean, just as with the Nokia 5800, that Nokia really pulled a rabbit out of the hat and blowing away the competition. You know, this is going to be available for, well, it's €200 before tax and subsidies, which means in the UK it's going to have a SIM-free price of about £200. And that's getting within range of the pay-as-you-go market for a SIM-free device. So you imagine a £30 subsidy for a pay-as-you-go device, maybe £170, and obviously may come down in time. And very accessible, obviously, on a contract. I would expect this, even on maybe some of the £15, £20 contracts, to be free. And you compare this to some of the competitor devices in the market, and the nearest you can get to it is something like the Centro, which maybe be about the same price or a little bit more expensive, and that's very much based on older technology, especially the GSM variant. You know, it's 2G, it's Palm OS as opposed to Windows Mobile, which may be a good thing as far as some people are concerned. But, you know, a lower spec camera, and really, the Centro doesn't measure up at all in software terms to, you know, the E-Series and their 63rd edition. But then you look at things like maybe the Samsung Blackjack from Windows Mobile and some of the other QWERTY devices, but the really big one Nokia are going after here is BlackBerry. I haven't seen an E63 yet in person, hopefully in the next week or two. But I really think it has the look and feel of a BlackBerry down to a T, and that's who Nokia are really going after in a very competitive way. And Nokia are doing the same, I think, in the touchscreen space with something like the 5800, and they've done the same in the entry-level market in, you know, somewhere like India, where they've absolutely killed Motorola in the last year or so. So it's really interesting to see this device come in. What to me is, you know, I really can't see how they've managed to get their price point down so quickly. I mean, it's about 40% less than the launch price of the E71 was. Now, of course, it will have an initial launch premium, but I do expect that to go down quite quickly. And Nokia is really being very aggressive in its sort of competitive strategy here. And I think at that price point, the E63 is going to do very well. You know, obviously, as an E-Series, it's marketed at the enterprise market and businesses. But the hints of things like the red and the aquamarine that were hinted at briefly there makes it much more appealing, I think, as a consumer device. And especially with, you know, the idea of internet browsing coming in more to the consumer consciousness. QWERTY devices are getting more popular, and they're very, very popular in the States. So this could be the sort of device that could help Nokia crack the US market. You'll be able to buy this device for about the same cost you have to pay for an iPhone on a contract, yet you'd be getting the E63 SIM free. If you got the E63 on a contract in the States, it would probably cost in the region of $70 or so, and I think that's going to be a very sweet price point. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. So it may lose a little bit of attention because people think it's just a cut down E71, but that really doesn't underline its significance at all. In some ways, I would say the E63 is more significant strategically and long term as a sort of competitive thing for Nokia than the E71 itself was.
Yeah. Well, that's it's perhaps slightly controversial, but very well-reasoned argument. I have to say the E71 itself is selling pretty well, and I do go back to loving the metal feel, but then I'm a high-end user. We are getting some exciting devices through, but they're not all necessarily Symbian. I've been playing with a T-Mobile Android G1 over the last week or so, and that I'll maybe bring my thoughts on that in one of the next podcasts as a competing device to some of the newest S60 devices. I've also got Sony Ericsson C905, which is 8 megapixels with Xenon flash, and it's just an awesome camera. But it's again, that's you could class it as a feature phone, although, as you know, modern feature phones are very much up in smartphone territory and all bar the third-party application support. So probably more on those two devices in the next podcast. Rafe's still got his 5800, the Express Music, the Tube, and there's more coming on that in the site in the next week or so. So plenty of device stuff coming up. But I want to go back to something from the smartphone show. That's not my smartphone show. That's the Symbian smartphone show. And there was plenty happening in regards to QT. Now, I know absolutely nothing about QT, but Rafe is something of a gender up expert on it. So for the novice listener to this podcast, Rafe, what is QT? Why is it important, and what's going to happen to it in the future?
Well, I would first say I'm not an expert on QT, but hopefully I can give an introduction to the novice. And the reason people need to be aware of this is that it's going to be very important in Nokia's future software strategy in terms of how they're going to run their services, things like Nokia Maps, but also Nokia Music and future services across multiple devices. And we're not just talking mobile devices, so not just Series 40 and S60, we're also talking cross-platform, as in mobile, PC and web. And what it is, it's a way for developers to write a single instance of a bit of program that runs across all of these platforms. Now, the reason it's relevant here is at the smartphone show, the first version of it for S60 was announced. It's a preview release. The full release will happen probably sometime in the middle of next year. But what you can now do is run QT-based programs on S60 devices. It doesn't really matter the underlying technology in one sense, but what it does matter is that a service developer can create a service that runs on the web, on the PC and on the S60 device, and use an awful lot of common code between it. And that's relevant because it enables them to significantly reduce the cost of development and reduce the cost of doing updates and changes. Now, QT as it stands is very much sort of in the prototype framework, and a lot of it's about the sort of application logic. And from a technical point of view, it can tie into the S60 C++ API, so it can actually get quite low-level integration into the phone. That does obviously have to be customized for each type of devices. And then the second important thing is it also does quite a lot in the UI sense. And so compared to something like Python, which is, again, it's a cross-platform scripting language, QT actually also provides a way to do UI across multiple platforms. Now, that's harder to do than it actually sounds because of the great variation. And at the moment, QT applications running on S60 look nothing like the standard S60 application. But built into it, QT has effectively a style sheet system which allows developers to write a style sheet that describes the way the UI of their QT program works. And so it's, we'll certainly see a way to make these QT programs look like an S60 program by changing the style sheet of the program. So rather than having to rewrite the UI with each component specifically for each platform, they can use this kind of style sheet approach, as you do on the web, to do a mobile and a PC version, to create a S60 version, something that runs maybe on Windows Mobile, on the Linux platform, something that runs on the web and the PC. So it's a very powerful way of providing a cross-platform software environment. And I'm aware I'm using technical terms here, but this really is very important for the future of services, where they need to be able to run across and integrate between multiple different platforms. If you think away the way you typically use maps, you might look something up on the web, you want to be able to use it on the phone, and you need a way to get between those, and you want a sort of common experience to make it as easy to use as possible between those. And Qt will basically be a lot of the engine that powers sort of the underneath of how some of that happens. It is still a few years away, but it's going to be used by Nokia themselves, but I also think it'll be used by a lot of third-party developers. And there's already a lot of Qt developers out there who might go, we've got this application or service already running. We might be able to port it to S60 more easily. So that hopefully explains some of the background to why Qt is so important. And we've had quite a few questions about it by email, and hopefully that offers something of a background. Now, next week I'm actually off to a Forum Nokia Developer Day in Budapest, and I'll actually be hearing more about Qt. And so hopefully I'll be able to report back on some of the more technical aspects of it. And if anyone's got any questions, send them in and we'll try and get them answered.
I think my thing on Qt is, and it all sounds absolutely wonderful, but I seem to remember having heard, well, you can do all your coding and everything at one level and then write up the interface so it'll run over multiple Symbian devices as a separate area. And I'm sure that was meant to be the big differentiator that would allow you to write your code once, and then just rewrite the UI layer for S60, S80, UIQ, and so on and so on. So I would love to be proved wrong, but at every point that there's been a, you can write the code once and it'll run on all these platforms in computing, there's always a gotcha. So I'm going to be interested to see what gotchas there are at the moment. But what is good about Qt, and what Rafe said there, is the fact that it is a tool that already has its fans and already has people that enjoy using it. Now, we've already seen Python come out, and the Ruby has just come out from Symbian as well. And it was David Wood, when I interviewed him for our Desert Island Desktops feature last week, that says, happy developers are developers using the tools they like. So as long as Nokia continues to use the regular Qt chain, and the only difference is the actual device that it runs on, rather than put in fancy libraries or anything, then I think there are advantages. But I think the advantages are in the existing developer base and the existing knowledge, not in a write once run anywhere methodology.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you there, Ewan. I think the amount of criticism Symbian gets for being difficult to develop for, that certainly Qt will go away to solving it. And, you know, yes, we have heard the write once run anywhere thing, and that never really works, and Qt was in part a response to kind of all the failings of that, and it does take a rather different approach to some of the others. As I say, it's sort of an interpretive runtime language. It's difficult to explain the differences succinctly, but as I say, there is this UI component which is rather unique to Qt, which does go a long way to helping, and it is likely that at least some of the underlying code for the basic stuff can also be done in Qt. Underneath that, you know, in theory, for cross-platform stuff, probably the most sensible thing to use would be standard C, using things like the POSIX library and the standard C library as provided through OpenC and OpenC++ on the S60 platform. But yes, it goes without saying that none of this, enables magic, but it is about reducing development times and trying to make it easier to create cross-platform stuff, because I think it's pretty clear from services that you can't just run them in isolation on one platform. They have to work on the web, on the PC, on the mobile. You know, any service that looks to be web-only or mobile-only probably isn't going to go very far, because we're going to be accessing the internet and these types of services from multiple different types of devices. So that cross-platform thing is already important now, and I think it'll only become more important in the future.
Okay, thanks, Rafe. Well, we're almost out of time, so we're going to say goodbye until next week's exciting insights. It's a goodbye, first of all, from the man we very much hope is not going to be swept away in a Sussex river in the next week. That's Rafe Lanford.
Thank you, Steve.
And it's a goodbye from the man who we very much hope won't be eaten alive by the organic screen technology evolving and growing on his new Nokia N85, Ewan Spence.
I'm just so glad you didn't see Here's the Man We Hope Is Run Away by a Sussex River. So thank you, Steve, and everyone listening.
All right, catch you next time.